There's an invasion going on in your grocery store. Have you noticed it? The produce department, the dairy department, the meat department, and even the bakery are being invaded by highly processed foods. It used to be safe enough to sort of stay on the outside ring of the grocery store, remember? If you didn't go into those center aisles, you were going to be okay. Just kind of stick to the outside and then get out of there before you're tempted to go inside. But now little zucchinis are being forced to sit squeezed together on styrofoam trays wrapped in shrink wrap. Yogurt must endure smaller and smaller plastic containers with more and more topping add-ons on top. Fresh meat has to make way for pre-breaded cuts and fillets already marinating in heaven knows what. Even cupcakes must be so protected by a hard plastic case that they would survive a week-long trek in the Himalayas. And don't get me started about putting spinach in heavy-duty plastic tubs. There is an invasion going on in your grocery store, I am telling you, and it's just one more sign of how far out of whack our culture has gotten when it comes to its relationship with the earth. Now, I know that many of you are thinking to yourself about how you buy fresh produce at farm stands and make sure that your eggs come from free-range chickens who frolic in the sunshine. But before you get too self-righteous, ask yourself, do you know where the food comes from that's served in your favorite restaurants? Think for a minute about the ways that your hurried lifestyle can force you to compromise your ideals for convenience in the blink of an eye. Think for a moment about that Starbucks cup that you threw away yesterday. Think about the takeout food that you ordered that came in styrofoam containers. And lest you think that I have got it all figured out, think again, I suffer too from the same temptations, giving myself the same lousy excuses, feeling the same sense of futility, and I also take the same self-righteous pride in my own small choices. None of us lacks for information. All of us knows ways that we could act better. And yet, here we are, both personally and culturally responsible for the destruction of the earth. Every culture has its creation myth. The one that most of us are familiar with comes from the Jewish tradition. God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created humankind in God's image. Male and female, they were created. And God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there God put the man and the woman who had been formed. Out of the ground God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We all know how this story turns out. Once Adam and Eve ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they no longer fit in the garden. The myth tells us that their eyes were opened and they saw that they were naked. This loss of innocence is what happens to each of us as we move from infancy into childhood and from childhood into adulthood. We realize that we cannot stay in the safety and security of our families. We realize that a whole world exists outside the walls of our homes, a world full of beauty and full of horror. We too are expelled by our knowledge of good and evil. We accept this. But what is all this talk about domination and dominion? Does God really want us to subjugate the earth and to dominate it? Sadly, this is the very message that Western culture has taken from this creation myth. Both explicitly and implicitly, most humans believe that they have the right to do with the earth as they see fit. And I would argue that human dominion of the earth is worse now than it ever has been in history, worse even than at the height of the Industrial Revolution, worse than the era of open pit mining, and worse than the lumber booms that deforested millions of acres. The reason our dominion of the earth is worse now is that a hyper-consumerism is driving a shopping craze like the earth has never seen before. And shopping requires products to buy. Our hunger for more and more means that the earth does not stand a chance until we curb that hunger. Our desire for convenience means that everything in our fragile ecosystem loses, including us. I don't know about you, but one of the thoughts that goes through my mind each time I enter a Target store or a Macy's is that I know that everything in that store will wind up in the garbage sooner or later. The same is true of every item in every shopping mall. I know that every article of clothing, every plastic toy, every shoe, every vacuum cleaner, every shower curtain is destined for a landfill or an incinerator. Every single thing, at Home Goods or REI or even Lowe's, will wind up as garbage one day. As you might imagine, this makes me a very selective shopper. In order to see the true cost of something I buy, I must factor in the environmental toll that it takes to make it and the environmental toll that it takes to dispose of it when I no longer need it or want it. And the true trouble with recycling is that it allows us to justify our purchases all that much more easily. Whether we recycle it or not, it will wind up in the garbage sooner or later. Shopping is serious and dangerous business. The hardest thing in the world for people of relative privilege to reconcile are the comforts of their lifestyles and the knowledge of where those comforts come from. There's no denying that most of us live in a comfortable place, with stately old houses, tree-lined streets, colorful gardens, and nearby parks, ponds, and wetlands. This is one of the most comfortable places on earth to live. And I would not want to change our quality of life. What I would want to change is that the notion that our comfort does not come without its own heavy price tag, a heavy environmental price tag, and an even heavier psychic one. The truth is, Concord exists because a place like Lowell exists. Massachusetts exists because a place like Mississippi exists. The United States exists because a place like China exists. A banana from Honduras is not just a banana, it is an undeniable connection to Central American poverty. A new shirt made in Pakistan is not just a new shirt, it's an undeniable connection to a harsh government. A new computer from the Apple Store is not just a new computer, it is an undeniable connection to mines and factories and cheap labor. Almost everything we touch and own comes from someplace else. Everything we touch and own connects us to other humans, whether we like it or not. Every dollar we spend is a reflection of our values. Interconnectedness is not just about nature being interrelated. It's about us being one with everything around us, natural and manufactured. One with everything in ways that please us and ways that alarm us. spiritual quality that humans have, allows us to recognize both good and evil and to act accordingly. I'm not surprised that Adam and Eve hungered for more than their easy surroundings in the Garden of Eden. I'm not surprised that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil called to them, beckoned to them. I'm not surprised that once their eyes were opened, they could no longer stay where they were. For Adam and Eve are you and me, essentially. What they did not realize when they ate the fruit, however, was that knowledge would drive them out of their fantasy world. Will a similar knowledge drive us out of our fantasies as well? The long-term solutions for the Earth's environmental crisis are not easy, convenient, or cheap. They will not come about overnight or without much struggle, sacrifice, and misery. But the good news is there are plentiful ways to subvert the hyper-consumer world that we live in. And I want you to join me in this. It's so easy to do. There are lots of ways to be less typically American without even working that hard at it. We can be guerrilla warriors for the Earth right where we are. There can be immediate ways to improve your own physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. But all the things that you can do will require you to curb both your appetite and your hectic schedule. All will require you to slow down considerably and to do more with less. Subverting our hyper-consumer culture will require you and me to shop for food not encased in plastic. It will require us to cook more meals at home. It will require us to wear the clothes that we already have in our closets. It will require us to make do longer with the car we drive, the computer we use, and the ugly refrigerator which still runs perfectly well. It will require us to stay closer to home. It will require us to waste less and compost more. It will require us to get down on our knees and dig in the soil and plant seeds. It will require us to delight in the food that grows from those seeds and to share our bounty with other people. It will require of us to live within our means and to know the true value of things. It will require a tenacity and a thrift that will make us smile with pride. One of the maxims that I grew up with was, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. I'm sure that some of you grew up with this saying too, and it might be worth bringing back into common parlance. The clearest example I can remember growing up of this saying in action was the fierce determination with which my grandma Dana was determined to wear out a pair of purple polyester pants. Who knows where she got those pants, but boy, did she hate them. They were a startling color of purple, really, honestly startling. You would not wear these anywhere with anything else that could ever match them. The trouble with them was that they wore like iron. No amount of wearing them or washing them seemed to make them wear out in the slightest. And as if to taunt my grandmother, they cheerfully emerged from the wash each time, ready for their next wearing. After a while, it became a competition between my grandmother and her pants. She took to wearing them all the time, everywhere, just to see if she could defeat them. Gardening, walking, cleaning out the hen house, there was my grandmother in her purple pants. You could see her for a mile away. And in the end, the pants won. Because she could not wear them out and could not bear to throw them out, my grandmother simply admitted defeat. The pants were there to stay. They had earned a permanent place in her dresser. We have it within us to live life in a different way. We are part of the earth, and it is part of us. I wish each of you a pair of purple pants, and I wish you the tenacity to see if you can wear them out. So be it. Amen.